What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock. This is episode 20. Look at us. We've doubled the minimum for a real podcast now. And oh man, it's Eno Saris. It's so good to have you back, Eno. Welcome as a guest of this show.
Hey, thanks for having me, as usual.
Of course, we've actually been chatting for about 20 minutes. And I was like, oh wait, hold on. We have to record a podcast. We didn't talk about baseball. By the way,
linguistics,
yeah, arts and crafts with Eno. But as always, we've had another week of baseball. We've had another week of interesting guys. Have you, by the way, I think I've been sending you some of the new apps that we have now. Have you messed around with any of these, Eno?
I have. In fact, I wanted to mess around with one, the pitch level values.
You. You requested this.
Really,
we made it happen
it for this, but it wasn't working for me.
Yeah, I reached out to Kyle, like, hey, Kyle, can you update it so that it works in the mornings? Because I want to talk about a guy from last night. But yeah, that's a cool thing that we just added for PL Pro people. We have pitch level data by game as well. So you can look at individual pitches. I made him add a result of the pitch, the inning, the batter, and the count, so that you can see by individual pitch PLV metrics, and you can actually go and save that too. So for PL Pro users, that's a new feature. So go check that one out, pitch level PLV. But yeah, have you messed around with it at all before recording this one?
I did, but I really want that last thing to work. It's not working.
Yeah. All right. I'll get to Kyle. Hopefully by the end of this podcast, we'll have it up. This is really professional. This is good.
Yeah. the reason I wanted to bring it up is I had a really fascinating 20-minute conversation with Seth Lugo.
And, oh, nice.
Just to let you behind the wall, like, I can write a really good piece off of like 4 minutes with a player.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times when you'll see pieces where I have not talked to the person for 20 minutes. And this time I really needed Seth Lugo for a piece that I'm doing with Jason Stark that comes out on Friday. And it was very, very specific. I hate to do this, but it was a little bit Mad Libs journalism where I kind of needed him to just talk about having multiple fastballs. It just turned into 20 minutes. And even after I shut it off, there's another 5 minutes or so about our kids and coaching kids. And
I mean, Seth Lugo just seems like a fantastic human.
It was great. And, some of the stuff was illuminating in the process of like thinking of his career. He was talking about how the Mets never wanted him to throw a sinker, and they wanted him to throw a four seam. And what they kind of did was raise his arm slot and had him throw his four seam and his curveball and just focus on that and be a reliever for us. And they were obviously successful in creating a late game reliever. I mean, he was a eighth inning guy that sometimes closed, and he was pretty lights out as a reliever.
Right.
But they were working against his natural arm slot to some extent. And so when he got to San Diego, immediately he was like, I'll throw the sinker, I'll throw the sweeper. Because Ruben Niebla's, definitely a sweeper god, and like also just a Ruben Niebla is a great pitching coach. Just he has like a great mental Rolodex of different grips,
Sure.
And so he kind of he taught Lugo the sweeper and the sinker, and the idea was here and now I am a starter. I can be sinker sweeper or I can be forcing curve, it's all gonna. It's going to work to kind of be kind of two pitch percent,
right.
Plus the true curveball that he has. That's like kind of, it's not 12 to six and then it's not really big. It's a really great curveball. It kind of comes out straight and then goes down, it's like,
so kind of like a death ball.
Yeah, it is kind of like a death ball. It's a sizzle. And I call it a sizzler. Like you can hear the spin almost like it's a real spinner. And he throws it and it just goes down.
Yeah.
And
I do want to mention quickly, we should call it a swizzler because a sizzler is too much like a fastball. Okay.
Yeah.
So we got to have some like swerviness in it. So swizzler.
Yeah. But the sizzler almost could be like a pitch type agnostic. It's like, it just describes the like a really high spin ball high velocity. Yeah, I feel like you can almost hear it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, so he's you know, working with Niebla, and he's got, you know, the now he's got the two fastballs and the two breaking balls. And he realizes when he's working on the sweeper that he can integrate aspects of the sweeper into his curve.
Oh.
So he creates a slurve over the course of last season. And I was like, dude, like, you've got, and so this year he's also, to fast forward a little bit, this year he's added a cutter. I'm like, you've got a cutter, a regular slider, like a gyro slider, a sweeper, a slurve, and a curve?
Yeah.
And he's like, yes. And I was like, what's, like, how do you keep them separated?
Right. And how do you decide what to throw? Right.
Yeah. And so he's like, well, I just did a bullpen, and the entire bullpen was me keeping my breaking ball separate. Like, the entire bullpen was about replicating shapes, and that was it.
Nice.
And so that mirrors something that Max Scherzer has said to me. And I'm thinking, while I'm listening to him, I'm thinking of, somebody asked me in a chat. Yeah. In one of my chats recently, did I joke about Feel Plus?
Oh yeah. Right. Feel, yeah.
And they were like, what is it? And I was like, well, some of it is command versus control. Like, some of it is, the finer points of command versus getting it in the zone. Like, some of that's feel. Some of it is, you asked, how does he decide what to throw? He said, I'm kind of reading swings. Like, I'm kind of like looking at the body language of the hitter on his swings. And I'm kind of trying to not ever throw the same pitch twice, in the same place. So I'm like, I'm just trying to kind of rotate through all the possibilities that all my pitches give me, you know, in a way that's super unpredictable.
Right.
so part of that's feel. But then he really blew me away on Feel Plus. Like, his Feel Plus must be through the roof on the last thing he said, which is he has two arm slots.
Oh.
So if you go back to how I started the story, the Mets raised his arm slot.
Right.
And so his four seam, and I have a picture of it in front of me.
You can share it inside us. I'll look at it. Yeah.
Well, it's the video of the two. So here is the, that's the lower arm slot. And, and then if you can kind of pause it near the release, like, this is the higher arm slot. So what he's doing is, so he's got the sort of, you kind of, if you just like reach out in front of you, sort of, I'd say about two thirds ish, you know?
Yep.
And if you, in his lower arm slot, his arm is just straight out.
Yeah.
You know, it's just straight out. And in his higher arm slot, he's basically just taken his elbow and taken his hand and gone up from his elbow. He's not changing anything about his shoulder slot, if you know what I'm saying. Like, he's,
yeah, right now I'm with you. Yeah.
He's like straight out. So I was like, this is a bad idea. I was like, I couldn't help myself but saying it. I was like, you know, most of the people who've done this have stopped doing this.
Right.
I was like, Raisel Iglesias used to do this and he stopped doing this. And like, you know, it's like, isn't it really hard to maintain all your pitches from all these different places? And can't they tell what you're about to pitch given your slot?
Yeah.
And he goes, well, no, because I throw most of my pitches from both slots.
Oh my gosh.
So they're just, the pitches are slightly different from each slot. And so when he's over the top, he gets a little bit more ride. When he cocks his elbow a little bit, he gets a little bit more ride on the four seam, and the curveball is more 12 to 6.
Right.
When he goes straight out, the most interesting thing to me was he gets more velo.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Because it's like his natural slot, I think.
Yeah, it's everything behind it. When you go straight, I mean, essentially, whenever you have the arm slot that allows you to get further out, it's not even just about extension. It's just about, that means you have everything behind it. Right. I mean, if you're, you know,
like that cock of the elbow kind of is the
way to get velocity is everything
reducing some of the effectiveness. You're losing something at that cock of the elbow. Almost,
like. The thing I've always described, like the difference between sinkers and forward seamers and velocity, as like one has to move, the other one doesn't.
Yes, you're also losing, like that's a slightly different argument though, I think, because then you're losing some velo in terms of
all I'm saying is just like you have
I was thinking about movement over the course of it would reduce the velo because it's not going
I see what you're saying, right?
But you're saying even coming out like you're gripping it differently.
Point A to point B of force transfer, it always behind, it's 100% behind the ball.
Yeah,
that allows you to get further out, and that also allows you to transfer the energy easier. If you're coming at it at any sort of angle from there, then you're going to lose some of that efficiency.
Right. Yeah, so another way of saying it is I've been talking to Jimmy Buffy, who takes like a physics approach to biomechanics.
Yeah.
And he talks about the transfer of energy from, mm-hmm. there's a kinetic chain that starts in the legs and kind of goes all the way up. And so I feel like that cock of the elbow creates another point on the kinetic chain that where you can lose energy.
Right.
Right. Like if you are throwing with your arm fully extended, there's no elbow. It just goes straight from your shoulder. The energy goes straight from your shoulder to your hand.
Yeah.
But if you cock that elbow, it's like it has to turn a corner.
That's actually, it's one of the things I remember actually showing you in Arizona about, like, you're working, like, Nick, how do I teach my kid how to throw? Mm. Like, how do I do this? And if you remember what I told you was a thing I came up with when I taught like a 7 to 10 year olds how to pitch, was like, okay, the biggest problem that kids have is that their elbow is below their shoulder and they feel that they have to throw with their elbow. Mm. And you're throwing with your elbow moving forward. But really, anyone who has thrown a baseball before, like right now, just like lift your arm and throw, all you're doing is you're turning over your wrist. You're not moving your elbow forward. You're actually moving it back to move it, right? So how do you teach kids how to do that? And what I do is like the 3 o'clock method, where you have your glove pointing at the target. You have your shoulders perpendicular to the target. Right. So you're facing essentially third base if you're righty. And then you have your arm all the way up at the 12 o'clock and you have 3 o'clock, which is, you know, pointing at the target. And then you just step forward and throw. And that means that your elbow's above your shoulder, which means that your shoulder is the one that's going to go out. And then your arm's going to naturally fall down off the elbow. So it doesn't surprise me when you have that lower arm angle, then you are losing some of that natural force because you're making it so the elbow has to absorb some of that as opposed to just turning it over. Right.
Yeah. So I kind of just looked at his last game against the Dodgers through this lens, and he has like maybe half his pitches are grouped around sort of or maybe a quarter, like a third of his pitches are grouped around 5.3 height.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a bunch up about sort of 5.5.
I mean, this was a start, man, of like, I'm just to throw this out there. That start against the Dodgers for Seth Lugo certainly felt like, hey, you're the Dodgers, so I'm just going to throw everything at you and you just don't know what it is, right? And we see this all the time with the Dodgers, I think, of them getting a different look from a pitcher because they game plan really well. That's such a good lineup. We need to work with the element of surprise in some way, like Logan Webb not throwing the changeup, for example, that one start against the Dodgers, mm-hmm. too. And I felt like cutters were all of a sudden up 13% usage in this one to 17% as opposed to like the normal 4% prior. We saw fewer sinkers in this one. It's stuff like that, that I think like maybe Lugo was doing a little bit extra.
The full range from his lowest to his highest slot is 6 inches. Wow. But that's like the most extreme. That's like his over the top curveball. Mm-hmm. from the very top, and then his most kind of sweepy-ish low sweeper, you know,
right.
And so I just thought it was interesting when I talked to JP Sears about his difference between his difference in release point between his sweeper and his four-seam, he said it was within 6 inches, and he thought that was maybe an unofficial sort of guideline. If you keep it within 6 inches, maybe it's harder to see. But if you kind of go over 6 inches, you get to the Bryce Miller territory where it was more like 8 to 10 inches difference. Yeah. And people just saw his sweeper and never swung at it. Right. And so Bryce Miller actually changed that this year.
Oh, nice.
Been part of why he's been better, but the movement is not as good on a sweeper.
Yeah.
Because right. he doesn't manipulate it as much, but the release point is closer to his regular release points. Anyway, so Lugo's most extreme is still only 6 inches different. So maybe I'm overestimating how much hitters can see which of these arm slots is coming and know immediately. But again, hitters sometimes like they're doing stuff that they don't even can't even tell you mm-hmm. what they're doing. So to some extent, they could maybe see these differences in release point, react to them, and not be able to tell you that they saw the difference in release points. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. It's just like subconsciously being, okay, that's that, and you don't know what it is.
Yeah,
it is interesting.
He threw more sinkers and sweepers from the low arm slot, as mm-hmm. expected, more four-seamers and curves from the top arm slot. But he was right. He also threw some four-seam fastballs from the low slot and got mm-hmm. a decent amount of ride on them, and they were harder. His hardest pitch was a four-seam fastball from the low slot, 94.5. Yeah. And he had a four-seam fastball over the top at 91. So,
man, that's so
You know, I wonder if he's just trending towards the lower release slot, like over time. Yeah,
it could be. But that would make his curveball worse, wouldn't it?
I think it would. So this is feel, first of all.
Yeah.
You know, and it must be through the roof feel because he's maintaining two arm slots and five breaking balls and eight pitches overall. But it does. It kind of makes me equal parts excited and nervous. You know.
Yeah. It explains seems a bit.
Like a fine line to walk.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like we see that from time to time. Like we've seen Blake Snell and Freddie Peralta honestly last year have these games of just. Okay, it's really precarious, but you're getting through this and it works. And if you can do it like this, then great.
And how much is like Rich Hill changing arm slots to like prolong his career a couple of years?
Oh,
like,
man.
Is it desperate? Is there a little bit of desperation in there? I mean, it's hard to say that. But the guy has like a 2 ERA. So
Kershaw did it right a couple times because of Rich Hill. Yeah. Man, who is the guy on the Cardinals last year? One arm slot for a sinker and then. Fastball slider were different. He was starting or he was relieving a little bit.
Is it Pilar?
Oh my gosh. No. Oh, it was driving me nuts. He was like a rookie coming up and it starts with a D. It's all right. I'll forget, but it's not Zach Thompson. It's the other one. It's fine. But when it comes to Lugo, it does explain it, right? It does explain a little bit of how successful this was. And by the way, I very much remember at the athletic meetup
Woodford
not the Amish Mustang
Dakota Hudson
Drew Rahm yes
oh
so the D. Dude it's hilarious. He's side on for a sinker then everything else is like three quarters to over the top. It's so
well funny. That seems like a bad idea because
yeah it was
they can really see it. Plus he was throwing 91.
It was so bad. Oh gosh. But no, I remember distinctly being like, hey, between these two guys, Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo, I'm taking Michael Wacha. And you're like, no, Seth Lugo's better. I'm like, no, I believe in the command and the changeup and everything like that. And oh boy, I think about it every single time Lugo starts. I'm like, yep, mm-hmm. Yeah, Lugo, way better.
Yeah, I didn't know any of this.
Ah, I know, but it's just one of those things. I mean, like it's fun to have like, okay, cool. This is where we stand on these. And oh man,
I guess I would say this.
Yeah.
One of the things that pre-biased me in this conversation of Lugo versus Wacha, and I told Lugo that he sounded like somebody. He sounded like Sonny Gray when I heard him.
Oh,
because
that's
cool. Wait, his voice? No, feel for spin. You start with a feel for spin. I would rather, if you gave me two guys and all you told me was, this guy has a good changeup and this guy has a feel for spin. I'm taking the feel mm-hmm. for spin. And partially it's because of what we just talked about with Lugo. I don't think you can take a changeup and make it into eight pitches or five.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Sonny Gray has turned his feel for spin into at least three breaking balls, maybe four. Yeah. Mike Scherzer has three or four breaking balls. I think he might even have five. Like he's talked about having a power gyro and then like a little bit more, like, you know, like he's really fine with those breaking balls.
Goes back to Ottavino with the three different types of sliders that he talked about on Fangraphs.
Yeah. Seth Lugo has five breaking balls. So
yeah,
I think, and he was talking to me about the mechanics of it, and a lot of it was actually surprising that I hadn't heard a lot of people talk about this, was how pre-cocked his hand was when it was coming through.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about essentially the wrist down, as opposed
to, so he said,
to
for the cutter.
Yeah.
It was like he was holding a breaking ball, but he didn't have the stiff wrist, and he wasn't like almost like curling it when he was coming through on the top. Like when he's bringing the ball up, when he's bringing the ball up on his breaking, on his like bigger breaking balls, he's like cocked his wrist. And
right.
He's like, and it's a hard wrist, and he's really trying to spin it, you know?
Yeah.
And on the cutter, he's got a similar sort of hand position, but not wrist position. And it's not as hard, and it's more loose, like a fastball. So when you're throwing fastballs, you kind of have a whippy wrist. And when you're throwing breaking balls, you usually have more of a strong wrist.
Right. So, I do want to mention, I mean, also Lugo really, he added, essentially it was like 15% of his secondary stuff after this sinker curve four seamer last year. That's essentially 25% now. So like, he's really leaning into that, as far as, to the variety of pitches, I think this year.
2024. And part of that was just like, you know, embracing being a starter, you know, and some of this, you know, some of this just comes over time. Like the cutter that he's throwing this year, that seems like he never threw before. What happened was, he said that at the end of last year, they were eliminated from the playoffs, and Niebla said, "Do you want to throw a bullpen? You don't have to, like, you know, you're not going to pitch again." And he said, "Yeah, why not? I'm still get to work with Ruben Niebla. Like,
right.
Let's go throw." And he said, "You know, what about a cutter?" And Niebla was like, "You could do this way. You could do this way. You could do this way. Like, let's try each of them." And he said he tried a couple. Couple were really nice. He said when he got to Kansas City, he was like more intentional about it. He's like, "I would like to throw a cutter this year. Here's how it looks. What do you guys have?" And they had one more grip or something, and was like, "This is perfect."
So wait, I'm sorry, I'm just laughing because it's like Cole Reagans. He goes like, "Hey, what's up, bro? So I'm going to do a slide in." And they go, "Okay." And he goes, "Really, does really well." And then Seth Lugo shows up, goes, "Hey, I'm going to do kind of go, okay." And the world's like, "All right, whatever, great, cool, we got that." I mean, the other thing I should mention too is, I think one of the preseason conversations that we had was stuff versus command a bit. And I think one of the arguments I had about Waka, which I still, there's a part of me that still leans a little bit when both are healthy and normal, is that Waka over the years has had just consistency of locating the rest of his stuff to complement the changeup at a floor level. But Lugo this year is showcasing that more so. And with the variety, as you talk about too, with like Bassett and such, you throw more than four pitches, like stuff goes out the window a little bit. And Lugo having that variety now, and also that feel that you're talking about, really closed the gap, I think, on the command conversation between the two of them. And then it's cool, then you got the feel for spin. We gotta move on a little bit. Do you have anything left to add there on Lugo?
Well, just, you know, what you mentioned about the different pitch types, I think that it's almost more important to have multiple fastballs than necessarily a ton of secondaries. Because if you think about it, if you just had one four seam and you were playing all these secondaries off it, they could still keyhole you when it comes to the hardest pitches. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
So having variety, I think that's why when we tested like number of pitches in Stuff Plus, it didn't do in Pitching Plus, it didn't do anything, is because it's not the same if you just, you know, have three breaking balls and one fastball versus
two
or three fastballs. And because the number of fastballs means, A, what you've seen with Robert Orr at Baseball Perspectives, he wrote that pitchers are not throwing the wrong pitch, like wrong platoon split pitch to the wrong side as much anymore. That's going down every year. So what happens if you have three fastballs? You always have probably two fastballs that work against one of the hands,
right?
You know,
cutter and sinker get
you at least have one that'll work against lefties or righties, you know.
And
if you're lucky, you can actually, you know, use two of them. So
nice. So we got a lot more to talk about. I want to talk about a new stat that I just literally am coming up with right now as we talk about Seth Lugo. So we're going to do that after this break. So here we go. You know, I've actually thought about this a long time ago. I remember seeing a tweet from somebody complaining about Luis Castillo. And it was, oh, I don't really trust his slider because for every good one, he throws a cement mixer down the middle. And I thought to myself, this is not a fun tweet because we can actually see if that's true. We know what a cement mixer is. We know what a mistake pitch is. We know what.
Do we? Is it less movement?
More gyro spin? It's location essentially. Like we have the definition.
It's a hanger. It's about location.
Yeah. It's like a hanger with location included, if you ask me. I think it's really hard to throw a cement mixer that is not down the middle, honestly, because you're going to have the extension side or whatever. You're going to have more of your hand around it, or it's going to be like popped out of the hand to arm side too much. It has to essentially be down the middle where like you're just throwing it like a fastball accidentally as opposed to getting enough spin on it, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of my thought process.
So there's a spin difference or an active spin difference.
Right. We just have metrics to say like this was a good one or a bad one, and we can't just say like, oh no, he throws all of those all the time, so it's gonna be this or that. I'm like, well,
there is always variation within it,
right? Yeah. And then I realized with like PLV, I was thinking, oh man, we should be able to distinguish this a lot and be like, how often does he do this? And that's kind of what mistake rate turned into. Mm-hmm. However, one thing I wanted to do then, which I haven't done, and it's on this ever growing list of me just sending things to Kyle, being like, Kyle,
yeah,
I got this thing, put it on the schedule. It's like, Nick, I've got these, Kyle. Okay. but I actually think there is a way to quantify that. And when I think of feel, I think of consistency. I think of, hey, are you executing the thing that you want in the way that you want? And we could theoretically do that with location. We could theoretically do that with movement or velocity. I think we need more metrics showcasing consistency of metrics. So what I mean is how often are you
standard
within,
deviation of the stuff on this pitch?
How much are you throwing this at an elite IVB? How much are you throwing this?
One thing you're going to be, I think.
Yeah.
The one thing that you're going to be vulnerable to in this analysis is someone who varies stuff on purpose within a pitch type. And we have 100% not caught up that it's kind of two different pitches.
Absolutely. And I think that's actually an important thing to note though, right? So if I like see from the metric that, okay, cool. I'm thinking of Hogan Harris right now. Hogan Harris has a 15.4 IVB yesterday, actually using the person I tested with that new pitch type thing was Hogan Harris, because I noticed that was 17 IVB on the four seamer, then 16 and then 15. I was like, oh man, like what's going on here? And then I noticed that he had a lot of 17s. And then he had some 13s, but those also had horizontal movement. And I'm like, oh, that's probably like close to a sinker
or
a two-seamer that's getting thrown in with a four-seamer.
Yeah.
So then if I with that 15, we're thinking, oh, he has a 15 IVB four-seamer. I'm like, no. He actually has a large variance with them. And being able to say that, to say like, look, this is a varying one versus being a consistent one, I think there's a lot of value in that. And then if I see that variance, I can then look further to say, okay, is this something that is, you know, two different pitch types or is it not? We can also do that with location. We use, you know, we have PLV, and PLV is something that, I think one of the things that I constantly fight with Kyle about is I kind of want to make it 95th as opposed to 100%. That is, I want to get rid of the absolute wastes and the absolute bests. I want it to be like more representation of generally what you throw, because if it's a waste pitch, that's a zero PLV, like zero,
right,
zero.
Right.
Because that's just going to be a ball and that's always bad. So I don't love that. And especially in the smaller samples, if you have a game of like 5 to 10 waste pitches, but everything else was really good, it doesn't matter. Your PLV, instead of being like a 5.2, is going to be like a 4.7. And that really throws off the numbers.
It may not be very predictive because it'd be thrown off by 1 or 2 bad pitches.
Exactly. So I'm thinking like, well, okay, can we get a percentage of like how often it was at these certain things? You can kind of say like quality pitch rate versus bad pitch rate is what it is a little bit for PLV, but just getting a sense of consistency on certain spin, on velocity, on locations more so of just of like when are they actually executing the thing they want to execute as they want to. I think that's just that there's your feel. Right.
Yeah. I think another way of saying it is I think sometimes in terms of heat maps, you're talking about sort of tightness of clusters.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like if you look at like a Joe Boyle four seam heat map. It's just not, there's no tightness of cut. Like it's just one big
example,
one big blob, you know, but then you can like look at other guys where it's like, you know, I still think there's a tension there between number of clusters and tightness, but
yeah,
because I'm thinking mathematically, like just like you could look at somebody that had a four seam heat map that had two very distinct red blobs and they were tight and
right.
Oh, that's his high fastball and that's his low fastball. And they're very, right. And if you failed to call that two clusters, it's like cluster analysis, you know?
Yeah.
If you fail to call that two clusters, if you call that one cluster, you might think that's just as bad as Boyle. It's all over the place. But yeah, as soon as you call it two clusters, you're like, oh no, that's too tight.
That's clusters. Intent of this and that's intent of that. Right.
Yeah. And there's a type of mathematical analysis called K-means clustering where you're like, you kind of tell the math to that there are two clusters here and then it tells you how tight it is. And you tell it there's three. And like, so there's some way of kind of like running through the possible amount of clusters that you could be looking at.
Yeah.
And then deciding how tight they are. Like I tried to use that analysis to find out how many pitch types there are in baseball.
Sure.
And so I said, what if you tell it there's one pitch in baseball? How tight are the clusters?
Yeah, right.
Then you tell two. And like, I think we came up with like 10.
So what would you call the one?
No. It's
the one type. Oh, man. But yeah, that's so I do wonder, like with Seth Lugo, like, okay, cool. You're talking about Field Plus. Like I see... I mean, I'm sad to bring it up, but one guy I felt like I needed to mention, maybe not necessarily a whole thing on, but one of the first episodes we did was Pablo Lopez. And you're like, here's a softball, Nick. What's wrong with Pablo Lopez? And what did I say? I was like, oh, he's fine. He's just lost his feet a little bit. He'll get it back. And he hasn't.
He hung a changeup to Randy Arozarena, who can't hit a fastball right now. So some of it, I think, is pitch selection too sometimes.
Well, the way I see it is, I mean, yesterday's game was just nothing was there. I mean, he just didn't, he's lost his feel for a lot of his stuff. He's a feel guy that like does not have feel all of a sudden. And I was chatting with him about this. It's kind of a case where this is something I think a lot of pitchers should do more often. Like I'm looking at you, Patrick Corbin, where if it's not going well, you know, stop trying to bang your head against the locked door. Like think of something else, try something ridiculous to try and reset. And what is the main thing with Pablo is a feel for your changeup. You have to get that one back. If there's anything that you know about Pablo, it's that changeup is supposed to be the thing. He was telling us in December, hey, I always think to myself, the changeup is always there. And when that isn't there, then I think everything else falls apart because yes, he has his new sweeper, but like that's not the pitch for him. Four seamer is as good as it is because the changeup nullifies it. And without that, then it kind of falls apart. So I'm like, yo, just throw like 40 changeups next game. Like, don't care about, oh no, it's a 2-0 count. I can't just like throw and execute and focus and change every time, make adjustments. Like treat that like a full on bullpen game of just figuring out your changeup as much as possible. And gain that feel back. And that's like one of the hardest things, I think, for pitchers to,
because you're being competitive, you don't want to be a laughing stock, you don't want to give up a huge right. game. Yeah, but there's, you know, there could be an opportunity there to kind of turn on what I saw with Lugo. It's kind of the like turn on the random number generator,
yeah,
and just be like, hey, you know, catcher, next inning I'm gonna call all my pitches, and you might just be like, what the hell's going on? And
right.
I'm going to double up some pitches. I'm just going to do weird stuff because I'm just trying to find it again.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's, it's kind of interesting when you think about
it. Like there are nine hitters, like the nine hitter comes up. Why don't I just throw five changeups?
Well, that's an old thing is like, cool. You're in the third inning. This is a constant thing back in high school and college for me was you're like two innings, cool. What do I have? Great. What I don't have, then it's two outs or so against the eight hitter or whatever it is.
Let me try to get back the thing I don't have.
Know, or something like, okay, cool. Let me just, you know, find the changeup, find the curve now so that I have when the lineup
next inning comes around. Yeah.
Yeah. But then again, you got rid of the pitcher, so you can't do that in the National League as much.
Yeah. And who was he facing? The Rays?
The Rays yesterday.
I feel like you could find a soft spot in that order.
Right. But that's the thing, though, is being on the mound, and we feel like, hey, I say this all the time, like, what are you doing? You don't throw this here, you throw that here. And this batter is looking for this and doing that. And if you go up there and you're just chaos, like, chaos works too. You know, just being like, there is no game plan, and knowing them, knowing that there's no game plan is like, well, and then I don't know. Yeah. It actually
trying to anticipate everything,
right? It's like in poker.
He did throw more sinkers that game than he had all season.
Right. Well, that doesn't surprise me because he didn't have the sweeper, or the change. So he has to find out somehow, and sinkers can be quick out generators. Right. Yeah. But I don't think I just really feel that there's something that is throwing off Pablo at the moment. And it's a weird case of just, well, this guy's been doing this for years. He's had valleys before. Generally, it's one game and then he gets it back the next time. But he's in a larger one at the moment. You have to trust that this veteran still has the tools inside this toolkit. He just has to figure out where to make the adjustments, and it will get back on track. So that's a nice little tie-in with the feel stuff. But I guess it's just a massive shrug, and we'll see what happens. I'm excited for him.
I think it also speaks to like why, in fantasy terms, like if it's a lower investment, then yes, I will take a jump. That's why Lugo was in a perfect spot for me this year, because it was just like,
well, right. Yeah.
He's not going to cost a lot. But I do see some feel, but when you start to become more expensive, and when you start to become, you know, thought of as like a top 10 pitcher or top 15 pitcher, right. Then I get a little bit more nervous about betting on these field guys and these command guys. And it's partially because I feel like something can go, you know?
Yeah, that I totally get that. Yeah. The ones that I always do go for are, it's like harder to go for like a Freed type or something like that. Or a Gallen or a,
That was my nervousness about Gallen. And I wasn't right. I mean, Gallen was great while he was in, even though
he was weird.
Was down.
It was weird. He has one of the worst strikers, actually, which is weird. Like higher ICR with lower strike rate.
There's a strange thing going on with Pablo Lopez that his release point is higher than it's ever been.
Yeah, he shared that with him. It is, and it's also he's getting on the side of the changeup too. I think there are things for him to tweak and mess around with.
Release point. Yeah, I've been talking to hitters a lot this year, and I think release point and contact point. Release point, we learned from Stuff, was just hugely important. And that's something that I have this piece from a long time ago where I tried to just predict the movement based on just the release point and then looked at the outliers. And so, you know, this is something that people have been studying for a long time, but I think that Stuff Plus kind of put into focus that, oh, this is like the second most important feature in the model. Like, wow, like that's huge. And it's kind of funny because we just got all these bat tracking stats, and contact point was the one thing that wasn't in there, but I think contact point is that for hitters. And when you talk about timing for pitchers and hitters, I think what you're talking about is release point and contact point. It's that like, that's the finality of all of your timing. And if it's off, even by, in Pablo Lopez's case, in his vertical release point this year is, what are we talking about? 0.02 higher for the year.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, 0.02 feet is a quarter inch. It is a little bit more than that compared to like previous seasons. It could be a quarter inch, could be saying something about other stuff on the way.
Right. It could be a product of something else. That's occurring. Right.
But it is something that I think pitchers and hitters think about a lot. I think a quarter inch in a swing could be a big deal too. That could be the difference between a foul ball and a homer, you know, if it's the right quarter inch.
Definitely. Oh man. So I'm excited to see him get back onto it. Before we go to the break, I do want to ask one more guy. I thought about it before. I just want to bring it up. Like you were talking about, you need something else outside of the four seam. We talked about actually Bryce Miller a little bit. Where are you right now with Bryce Miller? Because he's having a really good ratio of season. Like ERA looks good. Everyone's like, oh man, Bryce Miller is going great. What I see from Bryce Miller is a four seamer that is doing all the work And yeah. secondaries are trying to throw strikes and they're sometimes working and nice, but like it's really tough to find that one really reliable secondary to complement, because, and when he does, I feel like he could soar, but he's still struggling to find that.
You know, the more I study this, and the more I like, you know, look at Stuff Plus and look at starting pitchers, the more I think that like if you've got a pitcher with a great fastball and a great secondary, like hold them close, you know?
Yeah. Right.
I think that's really unique almost. Like Jared Jones, you know, the fastball and slider are really great. And I think maybe the other secondaries are good and he'll have a great career, but just being that is great. Because Bryce Miller, you know, there are a couple other guys, you know, Spencer Schwanback and Bryce Miller both yesterday only had fastballs that were above average in by Stuff Plus.
Oh, interesting.
Everything else that they threw was below average.
Get out of here. Even the cutter for Schwellenbach? Oh, man.
This is a one game Stuff Plus.
Yeah, no, I'm going to. Yeah, yeah. I understand.
We also call cutters fastballs in our model.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why maybe we've been missing on Arrighetti. We're missing on Arrighetti. He's been like really. Yeah. It's not a Toby. What's the one that really blow? Cherry bomb.
Oh, cherry bomb. Yeah, super sweet. It blows up in your face.
Yeah, that's Arrighetti's a cherry bomb.
Yeah.
So you know, guys that had both yesterday. Oh, and Lodolo. Lodolo is also that. Good, great fastball, and the secondaries weren't great.
Wow, 50% CSW on the curve.
They had great games.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. But I mean, again, you could say Pittsburgh, good locations, also really good for Lodolo yesterday.
Yeah, you know, then you have like the opposite, which is like sort of like Savali, depending on what you call the cutter. The cutter registered as above average yesterday, but
it's yeah, kind of, it looked good. He located upstairs, yeah. True.
But like Tanner Houck, secondaries were great. Fastball wasn't.
What did they? What did you have for Casey Mize? Our Fan 4 Plus, which is essentially whiff chance. Yeah, Casey Mize's was 97 miles per hour all of a sudden at 7.2 extension.
And so did he get his IVB back? Because his 4-seam Stuff Plus 15. Was great. Huh.
So not the 16, 17 that we want.
So that was a velo driven number.
That was 97, 7.2 extension.
What do you think? I was actually going to bring up Casey Mize. What do you think is going on?
I don't think I think his focus on moving from sinker to four seamer made his slider bad. I think that's what's going on.
Of the stuff I was saying with Lugo, where it's like you screw around with someone's primary fastball, and like weird things happen.
Yeah, I think it's. Like traditionally, you're supposed to do a slider day where like your fastball.
Was that?
And traditionally, you say, "Hey, throw your slider like your fastball," right?
Yeah.
When you're more of a sinker guy, you are getting a little bit more side of the ball, which I think helped Mize with the supination a bit with it. But now that it's a four seamer, where you're staying on top a little bit more, I don't think it's helping Mize's slider. That's my quick. Not data driven exactly, but that's my instinct.
It has more drop this year. It's a little bit less of a gyro slider this year.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, right? You'd be more over the top with it. It's more drop, right? Less
velo, more drop.
Man, less
more
velo.
Like a curve.
That's interesting. Yeah, and I think he needs a proper slider that he trusts, because I don't really think the fastball's the problem.
But I also, like there's been a lot of work for him to get 1 inch of ride.
Yeah. Well, now 1 inch of ride, it wasn't in spring.
I know.
Yeah.
But now this month, he's like an inch of ride better than when he debuted.
Debuted not this year or like?
2020.
Yeah, in 2020. Yeah, he had a terrible four-seamer back then.
Right.
We didn't like it. And that was also the new thing in the spring that was insane with Casey Mize.
And in the meantime, his sinker has added 3 inches of ride.
Horizontal movement.
So weird.
Yeah.
Vertical movement.
A vertical. Oh, it's well, it's both. It's probably because, I mean, my guess is
because he's doing a higher arm slot, but right. that's not his natural arm slot. I mean, it's kind of amazing he's throwing 97 then. So maybe everything will turn out okay.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
I'm sort of thinking of like, you know, Lugo talking about they raised my arm slot.
Right, right.
You know, and now he's like, if I go back to my old arm slot, my velo's better. Are they working against Casey Mize's natural instincts body wise?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, this is also a thing when you.
The splitter is different this year. The splitter has less drop. The curve has
right.
more
well,
drop.
Well, it's him coming back from Tommy John too. Yeah. Right. So whenever that happens, you know, Tyone really exposed this to me, saying like, "Hey, I relearn my mechanics.
Yeah.
I do my whole, and that means that you can choose really what do you want to do. How do you want to do this now? And essentially, Mize is like, okay, it seems like to me, he's like, no, I want to focus on being a four-seamer guy instead of a sinker guy. So he
but then over then the course of the season right? just loses ride. It's like his body's trying to fight him. His old mechanics are in him being like, no, we want out. Yeah.
I'm waiting for the new Osmosis Jones of that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. We gotta take a quick break here, but after that, we're gonna talk about another guy that I feel like we need to discuss from last night, and that's Jonathan Cannon. All right, so Eno, Jonathan Cannon pitched yesterday. Remarkable game. 8.2 innings, a shutout ball against the Astros. Tried to make it a complete game shutout, and the last two batters, one was a check swing from Singleton down the line, dribbler for a single. He didn't even realize it. And then it was a weakly hit grounder up the middle, and that pulled him with two outs in the ninth. To me, it was a remarkable game of just command both sides of the plate, change-ups, sinkers, sweepers, cutters. I loved what I saw. What did you see from Cannon? Is this a surprise to you? How do you like this guy? How do you feel?
I wrote a piece recently, last week, about all the recent debuts. Mm-hmm. And I put up their stats, and then I kind of just like, you know, kind of put them into some tiers. And I called Jack Leiter and Waldrop worrisome warts. Yeah, channel my inner Nick Pollock.
I dig it. I'm here for it.
I said that Christian Scott and Mitch Spence actually could be completed.
Cutter slider just works in the zone. If you could throw those two pitches for strikes, we've seen Ashcraft kind of make a career out of that.
Right. Or just like I liked also that. You know, they had some command. They had different fastballs.
Like, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
there's right. something. I wrote them up. It's a long report. And then my two who might just make it, and this was damning fate praise because I'm not that big of a Povich guy. Mm-hmm. And I said that if he makes it, it's going to be because of the cutter. So what I said for Cannon was that at his heart, he's a sinker sweeper guy.
Yep.
And that's his strength. So he's always, I think, going to do well against righties. And the question is always, what will he do against lefties? And Stuff Plus has always said his changeup could be good. Going into that game, he had an 850 slugging on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the cutter. So the cutter or the change had to be the thing that would make Cannon go against lefties.
Right.
I don't know what you saw in terms of those two pitches in particular.
Oh man, the changeup looked so sexy. Mm. Oh my gosh, this thing was your traditional big drop, getting swings over it, changeup that you just want every right-hander to have against lefties. It was really nice. He located it so well down constantly. I mean, he threw them mostly to lefties, and the results on that. You can actually use this inside of our game logs. We have splits for it all, and it shows you the new stats. So 80% strike rate. He actually allowed two hits on it, but they were not badly located pitches at all. The PLV on just lefties were 5.71 on that changeup across 10th thrown. And he also threw one to Jose Altuve in a two strike count that was gorgeous. I mean, he was just Altuve's thinking sweeper or fastball, and then bam, down and in under the danger zone for righties. Oh, got him swinging on it. Altuve looks so upset. There's a lot of potential in that changeup.
And I think the key has been getting it down.
Yeah.
I'm eyeballing his game log, and you know, you know, they have this thing on Brooks, which is mildly useful. It's mildly useful. Well, I like your approach a little bit better of like percentages, high lock percentage. They have like average vertical pitch location. So you can know why that's not as useful.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You could throw one at the forehead.
Yeah, it's just like, cool.
That's down the middle.
we have it for game locations. You can actually go by changeup. So,
Tell me what you got, because when I look at Brooks, I see that when he was, the Stuff Plus was saying this is a good changeup, but he's now locating it I would say like almost an inch lower on average. Mm-hmm. So I would expect that to show up in your location numbers.
Overall, like 80% load location on changeups.
Yeah.
Nice. Which is great.
Do you have a game log of that?
I do. So if you go into the game log, we upgraded our game log this year. Jeff Niven did a lot of work on this. It's great. It's quick. You can just go into the game log. You can select pitches in the splits.
So if I'm going to Cannon's.
You can click change up. And they'll just give you only changeup stats, and then you go to locations.
Wait, and when it says pitch mixed results, no.
No, you go to game log, then the filter
first
section.
Game log.
And then pitches, you go to changeup.
Right.
And then you can click on locations as one of the tabs underneath. And you'll see
is inconsistent.
It is, exactly. So we have 78%, 100%, 58, 67, but then 73 and 93. And honestly, I mean, that's an 80% overall. There were two games, and I believe those were the terrible ones, yeah, against Tampa Bay. I was only 58%, and that was just all over the place, that one. But you can also see arm side location, glove side location. You want to see arm side, and 55% isn't ideal. You don't really want glove side location unless you're doing righty away. You really want that to be like 0% for the most part, but or maybe it's just like slightly away or something like that.
So he's erratic with the change.
A little bit erratic. Games. But yesterday it was not.
Yeah.
You know, you can click on any of those rows and you'll see the pitch details and you'll see the strike zone plot of each game. Which is really cool. So you'll see that highlighted in just the change up and you can see how those are just
all down. Good. It is a little bit in and out.
Yeah.
It's all down.
But what you're saying with Cannon, you're right. I think the sinker command is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you can switch that's in the game. Like, you see, he goes in and out. So he goes inside of right-handers, goes backdoor as well. It was a fantastic pitch for a 71% strike range, just a 22% ICR across.
And in that game, he also used his cutter more than average, and it was almost a tick harder than average.
Yep.
I mean, if he's throwing a 90-mile-an-hour cutter, then that becomes his primary fastball against lefties.
Basically. It looks so good. It's like, I love this mix from him. I got Michael King vibes watching this.
Yeah. Yes. That's who it is. Yeah.
And the problem
because
is
that he's a sinker sweeper guy at heart.
Right. But he has a good changeup that can show up really well.
The four seam or the cutter is his way out, his way out fastball wise against lefties.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of the bats also against like Alex Bregman, the sweeper off the plate to righties. I mean, he got a lot of these really, really weak balls in play on sweepers out of the zone away to righties. Bregman got a hit on it, and I was so annoyed. it's like not hard contact. One ideal contact on 37 sweepers thrown. You'll take that all day.
I'm picking Jonathan Cannon up right now.
He's going against the Tigers next.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I did last night. One of the best parts about writing the roundup at night is I can put in waiver wire.
While you're doing it, you're like, oh, I like this guy. I'm going to go pick him up over here.
Jonathan Kang, the thing is, it is command focused. And when it comes to a young pitcher, I call it the shag rug, right? The young man's floor, where a rookie is going to be more volatile generally than a veteran because they're experiencing the majors the first time. They don't have the rhythm. They don't have the experience of making those adjustments in season like veterans. So we've saw it from Cannon earlier this year. Cannon against the Twins and against the Rays combined for 10 earned runs and essentially sent him back down to the minors. But the last two have been against Seattle and Astros, and he's allowed one earned run in about 16 innings now. So I'm excited for this. I think that he's overlooked, because I mean, honestly, also there's Nick Nostrini, who has such a good four seamer and just cannot locate it.
But
I think it's like the yips. I think it's
Nostrini. This is why I almost want to incorporate scout command grades into my projections. I don't know if it's appropriate to put in location plus.
So was a scouting thing,
but it could inform any number you have. If you want to make it predictive, you have to include ideas of regression to like this is a small amount of information. I'm going to regress it to the mean, basically. Mm-hmm. But basically then the question is regress to what mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, so if you're taking the constraint and you say, I like the stuff, but I don't know what the command is. If you if you regress to just league average, you might actually be giving him too much credit, because you're not regressing into rookie league average.
Right.
So then you regress to rookie league average. You might be still giving him too much credit for command if the Fangraphs command grade on him was 30-40. 30 future. Yeah. So if you add that in and say, okay, let's regress him to the mean of people who have below average scouting command grades.
Right.
So my understanding of Nostrini has been like, while I am intrigued by the stuff to some degree, I don't necessarily see a reason to move off the idea that he can't command it.
Man. So I'm probably misremembering. I'm actually looking up his walk numbers now in the minors. So my grasp of Nostrini has been like watching his mechanics and everything. It just doesn't speak to the most volatile and violent mechanics that would suggest that he just cannot locate a four seamer. His walk rates in 2023, 11% walk rate. Kind of between AA and AAA. And then this year is about 9.7%, which for minor leaguers, not that bad from what we've seen. I don't know.
It doesn't leap off the page. Like if you look at Edward Cabrera's minor league walk rates, you're like, oh, what's going on here?
And the thing about Nostrini too, is that the slider actually is not poorly commanded.
It's mostly fastball command.
And that to me is even stranger.
Yeah.
You know, really I get a sense that it's like he wants to just throw as hard as he can on the fastball, but has a good feel for the slider, and he's in the majors, so he's doing more of it, which then I say, okay, fine, maybe the stuff grade does come down then. And to get the command, so I'm not happy either way.
Maybe he has to throw softer to find it. But like he's kind of funny, because if you looked at like average pitch location, it'd be down the middle. But I'm looking at his heat maps and it's like waist up top,
waist down low, or down
middle. Like it's really the worst. It's one of the worst heat maps I've seen.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely atrocious. I say this every time. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. But then there's just yellow in the middle. I'm like, oh, you're okay there. And then like, because that slider on for us, it's actually purple. That's the yellow for StatCast. There's one other guy also about that kind of links to Nostrini I wanted to get to. And we're going to get to him after this break. Someone else who has had, I think, when it comes to Fan 4 Plus, and whenever I do this every day, I do the today's fastballs. I do this every night when I do the roundup. You guys should be looking at this too. It's a PL Pro app. I look at to see who is red across the board, right? So who has above average velocity, above average extension, above average IVB, above average height adjusted VAA. And someone I just got to give so much credit to, because I was hoping this entire offseason that he would actually embrace it instead of being the most ridiculous commanded guy, is Yusei Kikuchi. Mm-hmm. This four seamer, we don't give enough love to. I mean, I'm actually really curious what your stuff plus metrics are for Kikuchi's four seamer just across the last like four starts. Because it is so well located now.
What if I do the last 60? That's pretty easy to do.
It is.
Last 30 days.
I love it.
101. MS location. 101 location, dude. Yeah. Let's party. 120 stuff plus.
Yes. There you go.
That is sexy, dude.
That's what I'm getting at. You know.
Do all teams. That is pretty sexy.
Now you get it.
Okay. Taj Bradley's above him, Bryce Miller, Gore, Cease, Heal, and Pivetta, and that's it.
But he has a 101 location plus.
Yeah.
he's actually amazing. Getting this thing upstairs.
Yeah, that's cool.
His last four games, like over the season, it's a 41% high location for Yusei Kikuchi's four seamer. But last four games, it's up to 51. And look, you don't need to be necessarily 60-70. Like, I am okay with some YM lock in there, but the fact that it's just a 17% low lock, right? He's not getting it down where it actually would get destroyed, while for the full season, it's a 24%, right? That's a huge deal. The only problem, hey, your slider is like not quite there yet, back.
This got to be some level of hope for Nastrini, actually. Because if you're looking at Nastrini's heat map and you see waist up high and waist down low and then middle, say, don't ever throw low, right? Yeah. Just take that middle and go up, and maybe you'll still have waist above. But when you try to throw middle, it'll actually be high middle.
Right. You know, the problem is that
he's a one target. You want to give Nastrini a one target. You
know, I think, honestly, though, when I see such bad waste above and below, that means to me you don't know where it's going. You are already trying to go down the middle, right?
Kikuchi's is actually like he's still throwing some down the middle.
Oh, you know, absolutely is. But I much rather do that and not do low at all.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's blue low. It's middle. It's either middle. It's like maybe a little bit too much middle. But then by having that sort of one target approach, middle, maybe middle high, it's either middle or high. It's never low.
Right. And the thing is, though,
this is why I want to study like the tightness of these blobs.
Right. The feel plus the feel. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The slider is so important then. This is why I think that Kikuchi, like last year, Kikuchi was a little bit more erratic. And, you know, one of the conversations we're having in this entire podcast is fastballs and cutters really around the zone. And we mentioned this before, Kodai Senga, that's what works with him. It's why I believe that Dylan Cease needs a cutter. It's why Tyler McGill is actually more interesting now, because that cutter is becoming more of a thing that makes it so that when the four seamer is not painted upstairs, he still has success, because they don't know if that's the fastball or the cutter inside the zone, and the great extension reduces the reaction time and so on and so forth.
That's what I'm saying about the multiple fastballs. Yeah,
right. Exactly. So it ties into all of that. And I think for Kikuchi, that's really the slider. And that slider has been
It's
like a 90-91 mile per hour slider.
It's basically a cutter. He does go a little bit lower than the fastball, but that's good. He wants to be kind of middle low on that and middle high on the fastball.
Yeah. And the thing is, without that pitch being a regular thing in the past month or so, I think it's really messed up his overall performance. He did throw more of them against the Red Sox and didn't allow a single hit on any of the 16 sliders he threw, 11 strikes. I'll take that all day. Changeup is still there. Why? This changeup is messing him up. Oh my gosh, no. He threw in his first game of the year, and it was a terrible one, and he axed it, and then he had this amazing run without throwing the changeup. The slider disappeared. So then he showed up with a changeup, and you know, then it's been there still, and it's not good.
season in the regular season, he's only thrown 139, so he's not throwing a lot.
Well, right, but it has been in the past month because the slider hasn't been there.
And it's 326 slugging, 233 batting average, one homer allowed, so it's not terrible there.
The ball rate
is bad. Yeah, 48% balls.
52% strike rate then. Strike rate, what you want is about on a secondary 60% or higher.
Yeah.
So 40% or lower.
Because you get swinging strikes and
You get all
the be out of the zone. You could still get a strike on a swing strike.
You can also do. I've seen 58% and 59% work. And I know you're like, Nick, that's just like one percentage. Yes, it's generally over the full season, but those can work if they are tempting ones. If they're like, even though they're missing, it's close, and that really gets them in the, you know, thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, he can't command this pitch.
No. So this is not actually in the last six games when he's actually started to utilize the changeup more. Only two of them, actually three of them, have been above a 60% strike rate. Three of them have been below. I just don't want him to throw this thing. It's not that effective of a pitch. A slider, when it's cooking, is just so much better. That's really the last piece. But it is so exciting to me that the fastball is so good now. It's what it was supposed to be for so long. And now Kikuchi has that skill.
His story is wild. I mean,
it really is.
I think you come over from Japan. I think there's an inherent bias that, like, oh, you've got command. Like, I think there's actually like a racial thing.
That's interesting. I mean, like, Darvish wasn't, right? Yeah. Darvish was a high walk guy.
Yeah. I don't think it's true, but
Okay.
You know, like, right. I remember like people coming over and not saying anything about his command. And I was like, it's terrible. Also, his walk rates weren't terrible. So like, I think people also just poured over walk rate and just be like,
oh yeah, right.
That's
right.
Command. But he comes to the major leagues. He's throwing 92.5, you know, and not commanding anything and looks like a bust right away. Seattle just kind of tolerates him for 3 years.
I mean, they had nothing else going on, right?
Right. But in those 3 years, he climbs from 92.5 to 95, starts throwing a 91-mile-an-hour cutter, and turfs the curve and doesn't really use the change that much. And then he continues adding velo, turfs the cutter, and brings back the curve. And finds a hard slider that's now 3 miles an hour stronger than the slider that he used when he came into the big leagues. Actually, and 6 miles an hour stronger than the one he was using in 2020 in Seattle.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of changes. And
drive line.
Yeah, there's some drive line in there. I think that one of the main things also is that, and I've asked people this, is like, do you think there's, you know, that first year in Toronto when he's throwing hard and he's got the same mix that he has now
in 2022.
Yeah. I mean, he's throwing 95. He's gotten rid of the cutter. He's throwing.
No, he was no curveball in 2022.
No curveball, but
slider change cutter.
One of my theories was like, this is a completely new arsenal for you and you don't have great natural command.
Oh yeah. No, that was always the biggest thing, I think, is like natural command for Kikuchi was just, no, this is not what we do.
So yeah. In 23 and 24, I think a couple of things that were going in his favor were just getting more used to the new arsenal that he had.
Mm-hmm.
Plus probably what we're seeing from these heat maps is a simplification of the target strategies.
Yeah. I mean, he also is getting more Hava attack angle. So 1.4 for a couple of years and 1.6, 1.6, 1.7. He's also gained extension, which then in that same time, which doesn't surprise me, you're going to have a flatter approach if you are getting more extension because you're further down the mound. And also that is when the velocity like started.
Fundamentally different from when he...
Yeah, he just improved. I think that's really what it is. And even this four-seamer location was a thing that was never, never a thing for Kikuchi, was four-seamer consistency. His strike rates on that four-seamer... 2020 is 57%, 60%, 2021, 58%, 2022. And then all of a sudden 61% 2023. And guess what? It's just about 70% this year. That's so great. It's a really good pitch. He just needs a slider so that they stay off of it a little bit more.
Who else is so self-made? I mean, I wonder, Scooble kind of, you know, underwent some changes on the way up, but like
Charlie Morton.
Yeah,
you know, I remember his story. Of like real nothing, and all of a sudden, bam, there he was.
Four seam to sinker to four seam, and
a
lot of velo. Morton found a lot of velo.
Wait, he's like, maybe I should just push off harder. I remember that conversation
to some degree, dude. I mean,
yeah. He
added pitches, added velo since when he was in the minor leagues.
Yeah, this is always a funny thing. Everyone asks, like, hey, Nick, so who's this year's Cole Reagans? Who's this year's whatever?
Who's and this I'm like, person that changed everything that we barely
know? It's always I often say, I think it's 4 or 5 different things that it could be to be the next X. You know, there was Spencer Strider, it was Shane Bieber and Tyler Glasnow, who's the next Steven Matz 1 year. There was all of this. And it always comes down to, okay, is it opportunity? Is it health? Is it a new pitch? Is it a new approach? Is it new velocity? You know, like one of those things I have no idea.
What is the thing that you want? Yeah.
Right. The easiest one.
Eric Fetty.
Eric Fetty went to, same with Miles Michaelis, you could say too, right? Or Nick Martinez even going off to play Asian ball and then all of a sudden coming back being different.
Yeah.
But the easiest thing I think for us is when we say, look, when the answer is approach, that to me is the easiest one to say that, hey, maybe this is different. Zach Eflin is a good example of that. Going from the, I guess it was not the Pirates, the Phillies to the Rays. I mean, he did actually add a cutter and threw more curveballs. So I can't even say that one. The cutter just showed up and was really good in 2023. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to even say that one. But like, I don't know, Frankie Montas broke out 1 year and Alex Chamberlain was like, hey, look, he threw more splitters and threw fewer sinkers and there's your whiffs. Like that easy. So it's always so hard to figure out which other ones are going to do it. I'm glad to see that Kikuchi is taking the right steps.
I think, you know, in terms of dealing with that strategy as a major league team or a fantasy player, like you just have to identify, you have to be really good at identifying your studs so that your major investment has to pan out.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have to have a diverse portfolio of different types
burn
of things.
Burn and churn, baby.
Yeah, exactly. And like, and use these tools that are hyper reactive to kind of identify, oh, look, you know, like let's say Kikuchi was debuting this year and we saw this 120 stuff plus on his fastball. We knew nothing else about him, you know, and we saw two starts of 120 stuff plus fastball. That allows you to be like, well, pick him up. Got to pick him up. Somebody,
you know,
that's what fastball. I got to, and then we'll figure out if he's the guy we churn and burn or the guy we keep.
This is one of the first pitch Arizona's I went to, I think the first one, 2019. Eno, of course, I was like, okay, first pitch Arizona, what am I going to say? Oh my gosh, it's Eno. And you did a presentation, I think the first day, about the tools that you use internally to figure out who's doing well. Here's the exit velocity, launch angle stuff that's quick. Mm-hmm. And also showcasing how there are some skills that show up in the first couple of weeks of the season that do stick. Yeah. And then some that don't. And pretty much saying like, all right, this stabilizes like after, you know, 6 weeks or something like that, but then he's not available.
Right. Yeah.
too late. And I think that's the real point that, you know, I harp on every year is you are not drafting a baseball team. You are drafting a fantasy team that changes, and to ensure that the first picks you get, you're playing for floor. And then you really not only chase for upside, but you chase upside that you know we can make a decision on early.
Yeah.
You have to be able to say no to one guy and take a chance on something else.
Like in some ways, it's so weird because I have no idea how James Paxton is.
I don't know that. Nope, no idea. It's the same thing. Four seamers upstairs, curveballs down. Some games they hit it, sometimes they don't. Okay, cool.
But so this is not a good example, really. Oh my gosh, he's like not even throwing the cutter now because it.
No, it's just four seamer curveball. He's doing the Blake Snell blueprint, but like it's the same strike zone plot. I feel like every game.
Well, I love how he just gave up on the slider because he couldn't get the velo back.
Mm.
And it's just gone. Maybe he has a chance, but my point is like let's just think of him as a type as opposed to actually James Paxton.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would make sense to have a James Paxton type on your roster, like somebody's coming back from injury, you know, or somebody like, and then like a veteran, then you can like look at velo and be like, oh man, he's not back. All right.
Right.
And in this case, I guess you would have lost out, but you wouldn't have lost that much because he wasn't striking anybody out. He has had a couple of really bad blowups. And like, do you think he can make this new version work?
I didn't even
notice that he stopped using the slider.
No, I'm amazed that Paxton is still pitching.
Yeah, that's how. Yeah, stuff plus says 89 stuff plus on the cutter on the curve.
Location's probably good though.
No, there's nothing pointed to Paxton being able to make this work.
Yeah, it's
I mean, but also you're not emotionally attached to him as a drafter or whatever. And that one didn't work out.
You pick up Paxton for like a month and then you have the IL stashes and then you just replace him. And then all of a sudden, wait, hold on. It's June 19th.
All of a sudden it's rookie pitcher season.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's usually what June is. It's just a lot of them like Spencer Schwellenbach. I'm very interested.
Thumbs up on that.
Yeah. I feel bad for Hurston Waldrop. I cannot get out of my head that Keaton Wynn thing, man. I can't. Keaton Wynn's just a better Hurston Waldrop and it's just right there in our face. And I hope he's okay. I mean, he was going to get sent down and then he was like, my elbow hurts. Let me stay in the majors and get the dollar, I guess.
Yeah. You know?
No, obviously not. I don't want to really say all
No, that's what must have happened. I mean, he's like, I don't want to go back to the minors.
Ouch,
my neck.
Yeah. Don't set me down.
That's exactly what I read between the lines.
I mean, Schwellenbach now gets like the Cardinals and I think the Pirates after that or something. It's pretty nice for him. And I feel like that kitchen sink works.
I'm biased towards fastball. See, fastball stuff plus stabilizes really quickly.
Yeah.
Super. And then I just think I just feel like you're just better off if you have that good foundation.
Cannot agree more.
Because I mean, let's say you had like a good fastball and you could just locate your secondaries.
You're
just throwing that fastball. They can't get at it. And then you're locating that, even if it's not great stuff, you're locating the secondaries. Then boom.
That's the Brandon Woodruff thing. You taught me the power of a good slider that isn't necessarily the most.
Yeah, that's Woodruff. That is Woodruff.
But I mean, look at the other rookies too. You have like Adam Mazur came up. You have Drew Thorpe. You have, these are guys that are not
bad fastball.
Right. And it's not, we don't want to go for that, you know? But then you see like,
part of why I picked Scott and Spence, the reason I said that they were kind of complete-ish is that they at least had a average-ish fastball.
Sure. I mean, you say that because Spence is a 91 mile per hour cutter. As opposed to like, I'm thinking four seamer when I
cutter. The cutter is the average fastball.
But that's why we're like, hey, look, Christian Scott, we should be considering a little bit higher than the others. And we say that Cade Povich, who does not have this overpowering four seamer, he could be a command Toby.
It's the cutter.
Guy.
It's the cutter. The lot depends on the cutter. But he's not using it as necessarily an establishing pitcher.
Right. No, he's not.
If we see that thing go up to 25%, maybe I'll believe.
And I mean, look, he certainly appears like mechanically to look like Max Fried. He's been called many Max Fried. Remember the broadcast?
I have this thing. I think comps are bad.
But it's comps, so fun.
It is fun, but I think it's a shortcut to actual thinking.
100%.
And it causes. Here's a weird little segue. It can ruin music for me.
Oh no.
Like I thought, I kind of thought Vampire Weekend was all right. Like I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. You know? And then one of my friends is like, that's just Paul Simon again. And I'm like, and now I can't listen to Vampire Weekend without hearing Paul Simon. And it's like ruined it for me. And I won't do the War on Drugs one because people love War on Drugs and enjoy it, keep enjoying it, but I had a similar experience with War on Drugs and someone just said two words and I was like, oh no.
I can ruin a very, very big pop band by just saying, hey, he breathes in before he says every word, and it just, you can't not hear it anymore. And I can't do it. I won't say who it is because I don't want to ruin them for you, because they're one of my favorite bands.
There you go. So like, you know, I guess the opposite is kind of happening with a lot of times in the major leagues is like, oh, but then you also do this. Well, he ain't no Max Fried.
Yeah. Well, right.
Like he's a budget ass Max Fried.
I mean, look, it's a big curveball. It's a very similar looking curve. And I think that's where it comes from.
Fried's fastball is better.
Oh, 100%. And also Fried's fastball changes shape beautifully.
Yeah.
Like it's a cutter inside. Which,
I think we've actually started to catch on to. I looked at Savant.
Oh, yeah. You. Yeah.
No, but even Savant is now has him with three fastballs.
Oh, that's so, Alex Fast. Good job, buddy.
Yeah. Good job, Alex.
So with Cade Povich, my point is that's not a guy with an overpowering four seamer. I don't feel as if we should be really confident with that. And Jonathan Cannon, going back to that one full circle here, not an overpowering four seamer. That someone is relying more on command around the edges, which is riskier. He's certainly someone in a feel now. And that's a good thing.
But I also think like his
long term, it's a little tough.
Whole arsenal is a little bit wider or something. I don't know. There's something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's like a more strong foundation in that sinker sweeper combo. When I look at Povich, I'm like, what's the foundation? Cutter curve, maybe that's where he ends up, but it's not where he is now. He's not acting like a cutter curve guy.
Yeah, no, I think the four seamer is trying to be an upstairs pitch. I think actually in the minors it was a flatter four seamer, and it's a little higher now. So he was able to get away with it a little bit more. Because I remember seeing like a 1.2 and now it's like underneath one. And I'm like, ugh, that's annoying. But Kate Povich is another example of that kind of thing. There's others I'm sure I'm forgetting off the top of my head, like Max Meyer, I don't believe in as much with the Marlins because it's just sliders.
But I think the slider's so good.
Yeah. It's like
another thing. That's another one. Let's talk about that next time because I think we should maybe for next episode find guys where they have one elite pitch and they manage to be a starter. Mm-hmm. Because they exist.
That. Yeah, they certainly do.
Let's table Max Meyer for next week.
I love that. We've gone very long
in those comps, but we won't call it comps.
No, we won't. But it's so fun because the Hurston Waldrop one. Okay.
Pitchers who are kind of like them, but not exactly
just,
like them.
When we say comps, we're just having a fun time. We're not doing it seriously. You can still do your homework.
We're not trying to tell you your favorite band sucks.
Absolutely not. Never. That sounds great. You performed at my graduation. Okay. Come on.
Don't yuck anybody's yum.
Exactly. Eno, so much fun hanging with you as always. Tell us, what are you working on right now?
Oh, big piece coming out Friday with Jason Stark about the drop in offense. Pitching nerds will like it. There's some cool stuff in there. Some stuff you might have heard here. But we're going into depth, and then I have a long-term piece that people will love and hate.
That was very quiet.
Yeah. I don't even want to say what it is because
I don't think they're going to hate it. You keep saying they're going to hate it. I don't think they're going to hate it. Yeah, I know. next week, actually, I'm going to be in Philadelphia to go to the Phillies game on Friday night and meeting at the Infinity Lounge at 5 p.m. So if any of you guys listening are in town, hit me up on Twitter, inside our Discord as well. We're going to have a little mini meetup there. So I hope to see you guys there on June 28th, Friday.
Wish I could be there.
Expanding Lounge. I know. Come on, Eno, fly out. You got that budget. Let's go. but that's it, guys. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of The Craft. On behalf of Eno Saris, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about The Craft again next week.